Welcome to the podcast. Join Nate and Mike, lifelong friends, as they discuss stocks and investing. The name says it all. This is Two Buds Talk Stocks. All opinions expressed by Nate and Mike are their own. Please do not buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear.
Welcome to the pod. We are live. It's been a minute, Mike. How you been doing?
Today's doing good. Let me ask you a question here. Let me tell you my workout I did today, and you tell me what you think the hardest thing was.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what mine was. So I did 50 body squats, 50 push-ups, 2 mile run, chest with dumbbells, and then incline.
Okay.
The bag for 12 minutes, punching bag.
Like, yeah, okay. Throwing punches.
That was it. Now, I broke up the bag 3 minutes, like every, like kind of in between each of them. I got to tell you, of all those, and this isn't anything crazy, just a little Sunday workout, right? The bag's the hardest. Have you ever done like 3 solid minutes on the bag, like with a timer? That's hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still do jiu-jitsu, but for a period of time, I was also doing Thai boxing too. And I've always thought too, that regardless if you're just doing kickboxing, Thai boxing, or just using your hands, a round where you're on the ground and rolling, it's not the same level of intensity. There's a lot more positions where you can rest, but when you're actually standing up and constantly moving and throwing punches, 3 minutes can seem like an eternity, whether it's a speed bag or whether it's just somebody with mitts or with pads. Factor in too, I mean, this is why I think we both like combat sports too, that if you're trying to punch somebody, but they're also trying to punch you, and you're trying to move your head, your feet, and your body, and doing all that, that 3 minutes of a boxing round is really, really intense when you're actually in a fight, because you know 3 minutes of just hitting a bag it can wind you. Now imagine somebody's actually trying to take your head off too.
Well, and it's like, you think life's going too fast, set a timer for the bag, and you'll think it's like 3 minutes, and you'll look down and it's like 80, like 18 seconds or whatever. But anyway, I digress. I mean, there's that. And then yesterday was a first day in the mountain snowboarding. Got 15 runs in yesterday.
How was it? Is it a good powder up there already?
Well, it's like, I'm sure there's some analogy, in the market, but the first day is just getting the pass set up. I got my new snowboard, I got my new bindings, getting some reps in. So no, I mean, it's early in December here. It's more about, it's so funny, because even that first run, you're like, man, I remember how to do this. And it's just more or less getting reps. There's only a couple runs open, but 15 runs, I felt the 50 body squats today, I'll tell you that much. And it's funny, every year I'm like, this is the year where I'm going to spend all the off season doing squats, doing all this stuff. And then of course I don't do any of that and focus more on other things or whatever. So,
I mean,
how about you though? That's what I've been up to. What have you been up to?
It's the saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Basically we're, halfway through, I would say close to the school year when we get to December after break here. So everything's full effect. We've got kids' activities between sporting events and the music stuff. And there's just always events to go to. So that's been occupying a lot of the time and spending time with the family and enjoying all that. And then if anything else too, it keeps me from looking at the market every day. I don't know. I find as time goes on too, I try to look less at the actual daily swings of the market or what's in my portfolio. So yeah, had a lot of stuff with good stuff with the family going on too. Just keeping the time occupied and enjoying family time.
What's the favorite sport to watch of the family ones?
I'll tell you the one that is it can be time consuming in the sense that it is actually a long event for the day, but the actual matches go by rather quick. So two of the boys last year and the year before did wrestling, and now the youngest is doing wrestling this year. So I think when In high school and in college, wrestling matches are 3 minute periods, and there's three of those. But at this age, they're only 1 minute periods, so it's action packed, and at most, it's 3 minutes. But a lot of times, there's a pin before that, so that is actually that for that 3 minutes, it's actually really, really entertaining. And then a lot of times, though, there's like 45 minutes to an hour of downtime before the next match. So then there's some downtime, but those things are super action packed again. And then there's just
the best analogy is swimming, mm-hmm. where you're just waiting for your kid, yep. and then you don't care about anyone else. My favorite's tackle football, because mm-hmm. I'm the chain guy.
Oh, you have to move the chains.
Oh yeah, I'm the chain guy. And I run a pretty tight ship.
Yep.
Like the down marker or the, because it can be hard. Especially the hardest part is when there's a penalty. There's you can't, because it's this fine line where if there's a long pass, your tendency is to run.
Yeah, to start going and move the chains, especially
but if there's a flag.
Yep.
You got to go back, and the flags come in super late at the mm-hmm. age group I'm in. So you got to wait. And so, and then the end of the quarter is kind of tough, because when that's the quarter changes, you've got to switch it, but that's the way to get into the action. And you can kind of, you know, poke a little bit to the coach, like, yeah, I'd challenge that, you know,
yeah,
like,
right.
But, it's kind of weird. You only get to be the chain game at the home games. You'd mm-hmm. think it'd be the reverse.
Yeah.
You're the chain gain at the away, but I think football is the best. My least
the other
favorite
one was, would be the isn't there? There's this, so you have the crew that does the chains, but and isn't there the guy that flips over the downs?
Well, that he's with me too.
Okay, because so, I always think of Berkeley. Yes. Was it Cal or whatever? Or was it this? Which game was it? Remember back in the 80s too?
That was Notre Dame. CU, like the fifth okay. down.
Yes, I was thinking of Stanford Berkeley, because that's the one where the band runs on the field, yeah, or whatever, yeah. the score. But yes, the fifth down or whatever. And I was just like, you watch that, and it's just so egregious that they get the 2 fourth downs. It's like, how did they not stop that from happening?
Yeah, I love it so much that I kind of want to do it for like high school or for like college or whatever. You know. Anyway, that's kind of my. I did it with my oldest. My least favorite to watch, not to turn this into negative, flag football. I didn't, it wasn't.
Yeah. Is it, it's both flags you have to have off too. It's not just the one.
Yeah, it was one. I think football tackle. We just started tackle this year.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit better. We kind of do tackle, baseball, snowboarding. That's it.
Yeah. So you basically got the fall sport, the winter sport, spring sport.
Well, it's kind of like my portfolio, which we can segue into. I'll tell you
all weather
too, is that if they want to do another, if it's another sport, then you got to take one out.
Mm-hmm.
I really kind of stick to my 25 portfolio. Let me tell you my move, and then we can talk about the market and kind of go from there. I know you had a couple things. So I have 26 stocks, and I sold all my Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it all in my dividend appreciation mutual fund, which I buy every Monday.
Okay.
Just because I didn't want to buy another stock. And you don't have to sell a stock and buy a new one. I mean, you can do whatever you want.
But so you're at 25 now after the Wells sell?
I'm at 25, yeah.
And I don't here's know why. 25 is a great number, right? It's a five. It's divisible by four, which is very easy.
Well, because 20 is too little and then 30 is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, you know, I probably... I'm very quick to tell you all my winnings, like Chipotle. I could go on and on and mm-hmm. on about all the good stocks that I've had. But when I look back, I had, when I sold all my fractional shares, all my dividends, all my shares, all over 10 years, I had Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And this is embarrassing. I literally broke even.
Wow.
10 years with dividends, with everything. And if you look wow. at the 10-year chart, you would be like, oh, that makes complete sense. And it's kind of embarrassing is not the right, disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at a company that you've had for 10 years. Mm-hmm. We talk about so often, so many companies that you can, sometimes some of the best moves you can make are the ones you sold. And I sold it all and I put it all into my dividend appreciation fund, VIG, the VIG.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome. I don't look back. I deleted off all of my watchings.
Yeah.
Now because my financials, I only have three now. And this is a good segue to what you want to talk about. I have MasterCard, Visa, Berkshire. Those are my only financials now. Did you want to, Charlie Munger died this week.
Yeah, RIP to Charlie Munger. I mean,
got some thoughts you want to throw on me?
Yeah, it would be remiss if we didn't need, at least mention him. I listen to other podcasts as well and watch stuff on YouTube. So there was a bunch of stuff with people remembering him. And I just think that the one thing that I will miss about Munger, I didn't really just go out of my way to follow him or listen to him. But I mean, on things like CNBC, it was hard not to come across interviews of him or get sound bites and Berkshire meetings. But he was probably just one of the best at just putting it out there and just calling it like it is. I mean, just sometimes could be very harsh with what he says, but I mean, a lot of his takes were right on. So I think that I will miss his takes on the market, things like cryptocurrency, everything in between. And listening to how he really influenced Buffett's style is a good reminder to me. And I think you would agree with this too, that the whole idea is Buffett started under Graham and was big on just valuation, just dirty, cheap cigar butts. And let's see if we can get one more puff and get a quick 15, 20%, and then we'll sell it. And Munger was the one that really said, you know, you pay a price for premium. If you're going to get a quality company, you should expect to pay a multiple that's above a valuation that's above what it's worth now or above the market. And I try to remind myself of that too. When a lot of the companies that we look at, I mean, you mentioned MasterCard, Visa, those are excellent quality companies, but if you just looked at them solely on evaluation, they would never look cheap compared to a lot of other financials in the market. So I try to remind myself of that take from Munger too, that he really changed Buffett's mind. And as an investor, I try to remember too, price is what you pay, value is what you get.
Well, maybe you can probably say a little bit better, and hopefully I don't botch one of his big things, but when they would buy companies, they would want to pay companies more than what they are worth because they knew what they could become in the future.
The future
versus
cashless.
They weren't buying garbage companies and just hoping they could turn them around. And that's something that the best analogy I have is we always talk about how, and this is a segue because the day he died, I bought Costco the next day. Mm-hmm. I added it.
Right on. Again, he loved that company. Did you hear that joke about that?
I think that was his favorite. If I had to pick one.
That was
when I think of Munger, I think of Costco.
Did you? This is a great joke. Speaking of this, I forgot about this one, but it's at one of the Berkshire meetings where somebody is talking to Warren about something, and Warren says he brings up Costco, and then he's like, "So Charlie and I were on an airplane and it's actually hijacked, and it's going to go down, and the hijackers." Ask us if we have any last requests, and they go to Charlie first, and he says, and the hijackers say, what do you want? What do you want to say? What's your last thing? He's like, let me just go on my, let me talk about Costco and what a great company it is, and how I think it's the best retailer. And then they ask Warren, is just like, oh, can I die first? I've heard this before or whatever. She's like, I've just heard this so many times, but yeah, I mean, he loved Costco.
You know, well, it's like that was an example. I think the best example, in the same kind of mindset is so often people think, well, I missed the boat on Costco. Like right now it's trading at $596.
It's reached another new all-time high, right? It's all-time high. Yep.
All-time high. And it's like people were saying the same thing at 415, mm-hmm. 390, 250, yep. And so forth. And so I was even kind of like that. And it's okay if you were like that. It takes a while to overcome that. And Costco is because, you know, I might actually bring it. That's one of my 25 stocks that I hold. We've talked about Costco many times. And
again, looks very expensive on evaluation. It always trades at a high PE compared to Walmart, to Target are the closest analogies or anything in that space. And it always looks super expensive.
And I've been adding to it, and I've been adding a bunch to it. And right now it's December 3rd. And well said what you said about Munger. Feel bad for Buffett. I mean, 60 years they've been buddies, you know?
I mean, that's a long time. I mean, I hope you and I are still talking stocks like, I mean, at that age too. I mean, it is crazy to think about. I mean, another Munger story too is thinking about that valuation thing. Is have you ever heard the one about See's Candy? So this was
that one was of the first one they bought.
It was one of the, it was their first joint purchase, I think, during when the Berkshire days. And I think they ended up buying See's Candy for $20 million. Now, I don't know what that would be in today's dollars accounting for inflation, but I mean, in 71 or 72 when they bought it, I mean, the way Munger has told the story is that Buffett was going to walk away from the deal, that that $20 million was too much. It was something like $10 million or whatever. And Munger was one that's like, are you crazy? This is such a well-run company. It generates so much cash through operations. This is a known brand. It has a moat that we're going to make. They're asking $20 million. We'll pay that. We'll make that money up so quick. And yeah, Buffett listened to him. But it's that thing now too, where, I mean, they make $20 million in operating cash flow. I don't know what, every few months or whatever it is too. So you can see how all these years later, I mean, going on 50 plus years, that is just a cash machine, but Buffett was willing to walk away from it for something like $10 million.
Yeah, no, that's one of the big ones for sure. What's your favorite Berkshire brand that you use? Not like the finances or, you know, that is the best model. I'm just talking to you personally.
I was going to say, I mean, I know you're a fan of Brooks too, right? The running
shoes. Gotta be every day Brooks.
They have so many stuff. Here's one that I actually use a lot, but it's not really probably one that you think of. Is I think, and just recently, I think they bought more of a stake. But it's the Flying J gas stations.
Oh, you mean Pilot?
Pilot, yeah, the Pilot, whatever it is too. But a lot of those up in my area. So when we go on road trips, there's one that's very convenient. I always stop in those. So just every time I go in to the kids, it's just like, hey, you guys own a part of this too with Berkshire. I'd say Dairy Queen is probably one of the other ones too that I use. But there's so many brands too. So I just narrow it down to the things that I use the most.
Youngest just actually bought Berk for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, how are you going to go wrong with that? I mean,
I'm up 20% on my holding.
Yeah, I should have kept my Berkshire. Remember, I owned it years ago or whatever, and then I sold it.
Well, whatever. Care. Real quick, before I go into your holding, my holdings on that, half the audience we probably lost because they're like, this guy owned Wells Fargo for 10 years. Yep. What the heck am I listening to this guy for?
Well, Berkshire. So did Buffett. I mean, Berkshire owned. Yeah, oh yeah, Wells Fargo for. I mean, they were more than a 10% stake in it.
But I bet you, if you look back at the performance since he sold it. He was right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was right. So when did you, why you didn't want to, even when it was back in like 2 6, because right now it's trading at.
And don't tell me here. I'll do this first.
Okay.
I bought it at under $80. It was maybe like 70, 78.
Jeez. And when did you sell it and why?
I sold it after. So I had two separate purchases on it. The first purchase I bought the baby bees, and I bought it before it ever split the 50 for one. So it was something like 5,000. But then during 2008, 2009 financial crisis, that was long after the split, it was down way big, and I bought it. And I bought it right before the Burlington Northern Santa Fe deal when they bought the railroad. And then I also bought Burlington Northern Santa Fe because I thought I would have the option when the deal completed that I could just get Berkshire shares, but it was an all cash deal. So all I got was cash for those. And for some reason, I don't remember why, but I was just like, it's not worth it. So I'll sell the rest of my Berkshire too, since I just got all this cash from the Burlington Northern sale, and I'll just put it all and reinvest it all. So that's a very, looking back, that was, wasn't a good decision. Learn from me, kids. Hold on to your good quality company.
But I guess I'm just, is there a reason you didn't want to go back into it?
My real thinking on it too, and this is one of the, my main reasons, is, you know, I don't own any funds, any mutual funds or any ETFs. Now that would be different if, I was still working full time, because usually through 401ks, that's all you have. But I really enjoy picking the companies that I like. And, I think Berkshire still, it outperforms the market consistently, but it is just an easy way to be buying the market in funds. And when I think of Berkshire, I still think of Buffett and whoever's going to take over from is picking companies. So it's like a fund. So that's really, it's a flimsy reason, but it's just still, I don't think of it as an actual individual company. I still think of it as a fund of sorts.
Well, what's funny is that's the reason why I do like it.
Yeah. And again, this is exactly like differences in our styles too. There's a lot more funds that you own too.
Well, and that is a little shift I did make. That's a good segue. I'm up 20%. No one's bragging. It's my fifth largest holding. And I'm going to keep adding to it. That's why I like Amazon too.
Mm-hmm.
That's its own ETF. I recently did have a little bit of a shift though. I'm still big into the dividend appreciation ETF, the financial ETF. I do own that. I guess you could throw that in there. My apologies. I do love the Vanguard Technology ETF, which has been ripping huge, mm-hmm. especially been dollar cost averaging, even though utilities are then down huge and everyone can give me a hard time and I'm down 25%. I've been adding to the utilities ETF. That will come back. But I did make a shift. I did sell the majority of all of my Vanguard healthcare ETF.
Mm.
And I put, so I sold 80% of it. And of that 80%, I put 80% of that into Johnson & Johnson and United Health.
Narrowing down the health care field scopes, okay?
Because it's been a very, and I'll tell you why. One of it is I took the tax loss
mm-hmm.
because that's probably one of the least performing sectors of the year mm-hmm. of 2022, took the write-off. And I think we went over in the pod one time where, you know, if you took the top 10 holdings of, let's say, the dividend appreciation, and you instead invested individually in those top 10 holdings over 10 years, you would have a little bit bigger of a winner. And I'm such a big proponent of United Health. I really put it half in there, and J&J I'm still on the fence about,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I did. So I sold 80% of it. Of that 80%, I took the net proceeds, put, you know, half of it in J&J, half in United Health. And then the other 20% of my net proceeds, I split with FedEx and Starbucks and Waste Management and all the other companies we've been talking about mm-hmm. for quite some time. But I like that. I don't know if it's J&J is kind of in the Cisco category for me of my, if I had to make a list of my 25 of my least confident, J&J is in the bottom with looming of the, those, what is it? The,
it's like a laggard in the healthcare space.
Not
this year.
Laggard, but they're still, people are still suing them. They have all the, forgetting the legal troubles they're having.
They still have some headwinds to face too.
There you go. Yep. Headwinds. I'm a little bit nervous of that. It's definitely been underperformer. United Health, I feel great with, and I'm still adding to that, but that was just a little segue. So there you go. And I did add a bunch of Costco as well. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I have no knock on either of those. I don't own J&J, but you know, I own United Healthcare, and it is probably my favorite way to play the entire healthcare space. I mean, there's companies sometimes that identify the entire space. I would also say, like you with the utilities, I'm down. I just own NextEra Energy, but I think that's probably the best of breed in the entire space, and United Healthcare in that space. Just as medicine gets better and technology gets better and we live longer, I think there's going to be more and more need for healthcare providers, insurance, and United Healthcare is my favorite in that space. So I agree. It's just a way to play it. And J&J too. I mean, spin off the business and name brand. Again, look in your cabinet. That stuff is what it's the other company now. But
well, so that's because I'm a shareholder of both.
Okay. And it's the new stuff, but still the big items.
Well, here's the thing with J&J is that two quick things. One, it's trading at 158 beginning of December here, 2023. I wouldn't be surprised if in I'll even say 18 months, and it could be trading at 195,
mm-hmm.
203, 205, huge dividend. And now they're focusing more on just medical stuff. And they actually spun off their consumer goods into Kenvue, which I actually own Kenvue. And the reason this is a good problem to have, the reason why I've been adding to my Kenvue, and it just broke $20. It's actually mm-hmm. been down since it went IPO, been adding it on a monthly basis. But the reason why, that are the ones that have, they still have the Band-Aids, Johnson & Johnson baby powder, even though the name's not affiliated with them, Tylenol. We've talked about them before, but the reason I'm added to them is because I have so much exposure at Amazon, Google, Visa, MasterCard, a lot of the Magnificent Sevens,
mm-hmm.
which we can talk about more about the Magnificent Sevens, and they've been ripping, and such a large portion of my portfolio is the Magnificent Seven that I literally needed to find something like a J&J, Kenvue, something that is just going to be where I can add to the market, but I'm also limiting my exposure to those And I'll tell you why. I got a little bit of a theory here. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Lay it on me.
Okay. So you can name all seven Magnificent Sevens.
What is it? Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Netflix, Nvidia, and one more. Is that six?
I thought it was Google.
It's got to be. Oh, Meta. I forgot Google. Meta, Google, is it? Meta. Is it got to be? Isn't Nvidia above a trillion now too? So starting with the $1 trillion company, that's why I threw Nvidia in there because I was thinking they're above. Nvidia might not be. Is the Magnificent Seven? They're in the S&P 500. So I'm not sure if Nvidia is in.
Well,
the
no, S&P 500. You know what? Instead of Bob, I got it right here. You're close, but I knew you were off on Netflix.
Okay, so it's Meta instead of that, and then Nvidia is in there.
Well, it's Meta, mm-hmm. which I don't own, and I don't ever see owning in the future. Yeah. You agree, right?
Yep.
Apple. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go through them, I guess. Apple, second largest holding for me now. Still
by the way, I was looking at this the other day, too, and this is one of those ones. You look at the first number, and it doesn't seem that big. But then it does. So do me a favor here. This will all tie together, I promise.
Yep.
Tell me, look at the market cap of something right now like Chipotle. So yeah, do me a favor and look up Chipotle and then let me know what Chipotle is.
By the way, Chipotle,
it's crushing it, right?
High, and it's now my largest holding. And then don't forget, when we talk about Magnificent Seven, I've got a story about horses. Okay.
All right. All right. Horseshoe loves Endicott Steel, right?
That's right, buddy. All right. I'll play this game. I love Chipotle, by the way. All-time high, $22.33 a share, $61 billion market cap. What do you got?
This perfect makes my point. This makes my point. At least I think it's going to be a great point. I'm going to do some math here.
I don't do math on the pod.
All right. So, Apple, last I looked, so the market cap for Chipotle is going to be more recent because this, I think, was earlier in the week, so it's true of change. But the market cap of Apple last time I looked was somewhere in the $2.9 trillion market cap range.
Following you.
So, if you just narrow that down the way you see it on something like FinViz, it just says 2.9T or whatever. You don't see all the zeros after it. Next biggest company is Microsoft, 2.7 trillion. And then you look at it and you think, 2.9 to 2.7. When you just see it, I looked at it and I was just like, that's not a huge difference. And then I just thought about it. I was like, wait, that's a $200 billion difference. If Chipotle is trading at $61 billion, you could buy 3.5 Chipotles with that difference, which is still crazy to think about it because I don't know how to say this other than it just looks like they're not that far apart. Yet Apple was still 3.5 basically. Chipotle is bigger than Microsoft.
We've talked about it before. To count to a million takes 11 days. To count to a billion takes 32 years. I'm still counting.
All those things, if you stack that money up, how high it would be if you stacked $1 billion. It's crazy to think how these numbers are alone. And now we're talking, I mean, we've gone over it. You can listen to past episodes. We talk trillions, but it still just blows me away that we were talking about Apple as the first $1 trillion company, then Microsoft, and then $2 trillion. And to tie it all together, 2.9 is still $100 billion away, but it's only a matter of time, right, before we're talking about the first $3 trillion company.
I know we've talked about Chipotle like crazy. I'm still adding to it as well, even though it's my number. Right now, my top three are Chipotle, Apple, and Home Depot. And they're literally all the time just interchanging between the three of them.
Yeah.
So we've got, and we won't spend too much time. There's a point to what I'm getting at because we talk about these all the time. Meta, Apple, Amazon. I mean, all right. I mean, Amazon's been crushing it too.
Is this I was supposed to remind you about the horse story too?
Well, yeah, I'll get into it. Okay. All right. So this is my horse story here. And this is why people are wondering why I'm buying Kenview, Johnson & Johnson, these boring stocks. So let's just kind of go through some of these we'll go real quick here. Amazon, which I own year to date, up 71%. That's
a big number.
Fourth largest holding now. 71% is huge. So that's the other Magnificent Seven. We got Google. Let's take Google. I got GOOG here. Google year to date. Care to take a guess?
So I looked at this one recently. It's somewhere around 40, something like that, isn't it?
48%. Yeah. And then we have NVIDIA. That's number six year to date. You got to take a look. I own NVIDIA too. So it's my sixth largest holding. Berkshire's number five. It's my sixth largest. Care to take a guess year to date?
It's well over 100.
226.
Crazy. I own a lot of NVIDIA, and I can't remember which year it was. It wasn't this year. It was the year before last where we did our best picks of the year. NVIDIA was going to be on my list, and I think that was in 2022, and it got crushed. Bought a bunch, but then at the start of this year, I had added a bunch to it, not knowing that it was basically going to just go on a huge rally. And crazy. Here's something that I've changed. Up to year to date, my biggest, highest performer, but also the stock I have sold the most of. Now, I was just thinking about this, and this is just my evolution as an investor and thinking where I am. And knowing that NVIDIA is still, it's a profitable company. It generates free cash flow.
Great quarter.
Great last quarter. Continuing to grow, and they pay a small dividend. I mean, if anything, I'd love to see them buy back more shares and to pay a higher dividend. But in the business they're in, I think they need to keep so much of their cash for new technology. But also, I do feel that there is a little bit of a bubble with this, in the sense that last time NVIDIA rallied really hard was when their GPUs were put into all sorts of machines to mine crypto. And you saw that happen. And I mean, when you listen to people talking about NVIDIA now too, and this move, it's so much on their data centers and the potential with artificial intelligence. And I'm not here to knock or dismiss what artificial intelligence, but we're still very early in the game. So I see, just as much as it's going up, there's still a potential for it to come down on the other side. So I was thinking it's at an all-time high, and I may kick myself years later for having sold it when it went up even more, but I thought it was a good opportunity to just put it into some more stalwart dividend payers. So I sold a bunch.
That's my segue, is that if you look at my top, give or take a little bit, my top 10 holdings, yeah, I've got Chipotle and Home Depot and Berkshire and you know, whatever, but also in my top 10 holdings is Google, NVIDIA, Apple, Amazon, and then my largest ETF holding is the Vanguard Technology ETF.
Yeah, VGT.
So I have tons. Here's my horse story. Ready?
All right.
Tons of exposure, which is going to pay huge dividends, no pun intended, in the future, right? But here's my little, what keeps me up at night and why I trim. I love your idea of trimming NVIDIA. And then I know you might not like these stocks, but buying Procter & Gamble, J&J, Kenview, United Health Group, Waste Management, and Starbucks, the companies that are not tied to AI and not part of quote unquote technology. Is here's my horse story, is that, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, the horse was such a huge part of life and in history. And you can go back and back, and it was always a huge part of everyday life for everyone. And there was a whole industry around it, right? Where there you had the blacksmith, you had the people, you know, having the state, we're talking in maybe the 1900s, the early part of the 1900s, you had people that would, had the stables that would charge the stables, people making the hay. There was a whole industry around horses, right?
The buggy whip,
the people that would take horses, that took the care, there's probably maintenance cleaning up the horse poop. There was the blacksmith. I could go on, the people that made the buggies. And from 1910 to 1930, in 20 years, the horse became completely obsolete. The entire industry just went away.
It's a good analogy. Yes.
And what I'm getting at is just that we've talked about it before, is that that's something that's been around for thousands of years. And all it took was the automobile, obviously. And yes, horses still exist today. But what was once a thoroughbred environment, you know, no pun intended, an industry became nothing in 20 years, which is essentially overnight. And that's the stuff that kind of keeps me up at night, that in 20 years, five of these, you know, these magnificent seven companies. By the way, Tesla's the seventh one, which okay. I know we don't own and we don't talk about too much. It could be in 5 years that four of these don't even exist.
Well,
in 20 years, excuse me. I meant 20 years.
This is a great point too. And I can't remember. I think it's this old Danny DeVito movie. It's like Other People's Money or something. And he's like,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking? Isn't he like the takeover artist? He's like Mergers and Axes, or maybe it's Ruthless People. Maybe it's Ruthless People. He's in this movie, but basically he works for some large company. And I think he's like what do you call it? The corporate raiders of the 80s, where they just take over other companies. And he's talking about, and that's why I said buggy whip, because I swear there's a joke in that movie where he talks about how the car just made the horse obsolete. And he talks about buggy whips. And he's like, you know, there was all these companies that made buggy whips or whatever. And he's like, and then it came down to the last company that made buggy whips. They had a virtual monopoly. They could make the best buggy whip or the shittiest one, but the only one, he's like, but it doesn't matter because the horse and carriage became obsolete with the car. So it's the same idea too.
Of what I've got a modern day one too.
Yeah.
A recent one is, you know how we're always talking about Visa, MasterCard, own them both. Kodak and Fiji. Yep. Is it Fiji even?
Fuji Films, yeah.
Sorry, I drink Fiji water.
Yeah. Owned by Coca-Cola, I think.
I mean, when you look back at those juggernauts, I guarantee you back in the 80s, people were always going to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually my friend Jamie brought that up, big market guy. I was doing a long run with him and he talked about how, you know, Blockbuster, Rite Aid, now shutting their doors, right? Yes. We could go on and on and on. And it's just right now you think there's no way Apple won't be around, but I mean, we just gave you those great examples.
Here's another one too. Sticking with the horse and carriage too. I read this this book on cryptocurrency and trying to understand what it'll be. And they use this example one of the points was that cryptocurrency can still be used as a currency and not so much as a hedge against inflation. And they likened this thing that it's still too early in the game to understand what it's going to be used for, which I don't know if I necessarily buy that, but in this book, they use an example too of the paved road. So at the time the paved road was starting to be created, it was for cars. Now cars were not really ubiquitous, but they realized that cars would be the future, people like Henry Ford and others. So they made these paved roads, but the car was still not being accepted. So therefore paved roads were not being accepted, but the technology of the paved road at that time didn't just help, no pun intended, pave the way for cars, but it helped for the horse and buggy, because going through mud or whatever was really hard. It would splatter up. So I found out too that the paved roads at first was just used that. And then the other mode of transportation was bicycles, and turning out riding on a paved road on a bicycle was a lot easier than doing more mountain biking. So it's interesting that it ultimately did get to the point where the paved road became for the car and the others became obsolete, but along the way, it still helped the previous technologies. So I feel there's a room to tie this in too, just like you're saying with these companies, whatever it is that they're doing, they might be obsolete, but we don't know yet what it's going to be obsolete. But whatever the technology that's created in the interim, it still could be helping the Magnificent Seven right now, whereas long term it is going to be something else. I don't know if that's a ramble or if
no, it makes it just goes back to, that's why you have to diversify. And when we've talked about it in the past, and we might disagree on some certain companies, and now I'm starting to agree with Cisco with you, but is that you take your top 25 or you take your top 50 or your top 15. And that's why you have the best of the best of utilities, the best of you, pick a couple. And this is what I tell my kids, pick a couple of healthcare, pick a couple financials, even though those I'm kind of over those, but pick a couple technologies, mm-hmm. pick a couple consumer products, consumer goods. And yeah, that's why I trim off. And I think it's great to trim off NVIDIA and then use it to put in some, whether it's ETFs, if someone wants to do that, the S&P 500, whatever you want, you know. And that's kind of, it's hard to do because NVIDIA, I'm up 300% in the span of 18 months or whatever.
I mean, it happens so quick.
And just as quick as it can go up.
It can go down too. So it's something I've really changed too, is just the idea of, when it's up good, and especially when, I'm not saying there's headwinds, but still, how much can actually change now is a good time at all time highs to sell and to put into other stuff that I think has good potential to be consistent dividend payers.
I like the what is it? You know, the open, was it? Am I botch this?
Open AI or whatever.
AI, yeah. CEO, how he was like, I think AI could wipe us all out, but I think everyone should use it. Like, I watched the movie War Games recently.
Oh yeah, with Broderick, right? Where
you got to watch it. It's
again,
is
it so on point right now? Yeah.
When you watch it, you're like, it still holds up.
Yep.
Actually, do you know what really holds up still?
Terminator and Cyberdyne Technologies. I mean, that's the one I feel that if you're not going with it, is the most obvious when you think about what just tie it into Amazon being in our home and Google with things like Ring and Nest and everything else, and where we are with technology as far as robotics too. Is this like, and now factor in AI and the rise of the machines or whatever? That's the one that I feel like is going to happen.
Yeah, we talk about a completely different topic, but I just started season 1, episode 1, Sopranos.
Okay.
That still holds up.
I have to go back. I haven't watched in a long time too, but yeah.
Give it a watch. Okay. It still holds up.
All right. I'll put that on the list. And if nothing else, it's been a long time since I've seen War Games or whatever. The one
you got to give it, look, you give it another watch, mm-hmm. because it definitely, it's a little dated, but it still holds. Cause you know, some movies you like show it to your kids and then you're like, this did not age well.
Yeah.
And some of you're like, all right. This War Games is one of them.
All right. I have to give it a look.
Well, I went camping at NORAD right outside there.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, down in the Springs.
Yeah. You know, whatever. So, well, real quick on the market, dude, how about that market, man? I mean, everything just except for Cisco, I got to move on. I'm just so bitter about Cisco. Everything's gone up.
You threw it in there. You agree with me? Yeah. You're thinking about cutting.
It's just frustrating. I don't know what to tell you. And everything in my portfolio, FedEx, Visa, MasterCard, Costco, United Health, Starbucks. I mean, it's been a tough year for Starbucks, but everything's going up. The market's been awesome in November. The S&P, what do we have here? If we're looking at, let's take a look. Even we'll take just the Vanguard. Got it right here. S&P 500 year to date, 20%. You know, everything's been going up. Chipotle, all time
high. I think
highs.
The better analogy is even, what are the Qs doing? Because the QQQ tracks the NASDAQ 100, and the NASDAQ 100, I think, is above 30% or maybe closer to 40%.
Yeah, so
I think
Cisco year to date, 48%.
So Cisco, I think, is in the NASDAQ 100. So that's where it really hurts if you even had just bought that fund.
Yeah. I mean, right now in Cisco year to date, 1.11%.
So I've used this one before. I think it is kind of fitting. It's the Tommy Boy Callahan thing when he goes and talks to that one vendor and he's just like, but it's not on the box. It's not marked guaranteed. He's like, well, look, I could take a dump in a box and mark it guaranteed if you want. It still makes it that. And sometimes we just anchor so much. You look at all the fundamentals and everything else, and you're like, it's Cisco. It's a blue chip. It plays a healthy dividend. It should be going up. And I don't know at what point. You just be like, okay, it is time.
And I don't want another Wells Fargo. Yeah. I just don't. And so I don't know. Maybe people have been sending in funny jokes about it, and it's maybe T-shirts can be made. And
did you see Disney reinstated their dividend? So
I did see that.
The Disney dividend shirt would not work anymore. That'd be a collector's item. I'm like, Disney dividend?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I saw this headline too. It totally got me. It was one of those clickbait articles. It was like Bob Iger. Is going to step
2026.
Yeah, where he's going to step down. I was like, holy shit, he was only on the job for a year. And then I looked and it's just like, he's 2026. So I was like, oh yeah, he's giving himself plenty of room there, but it totally did get me. And if you look at his, we are now a year into his tenure. I was just like, boy, that last year on Bob Chapek doesn't look that different, does it? I mean, I feel like Chapek, more evidence he got a raw deal. He's like, look, I can make the company go down 9% a year too. I mean, why did I get fired for it?
I know you're not a big check the market every day, watch quarters like I am. And I don't do it because I do it to just keep on it's just, it's important for me to look at quarters. And there was Ulta, a little bit of a laggard in it, was up 10% last week. They had a great quarter.
I haven't looked at Ulta in a while. I still own it, but that's one too that someday I feel like they're going to start paying a dividend. It's just, it's like written all over. They healthy cash flows and everything. They expand at a moderate rate, not growing. Online presence is going there. It's got all the things where this is one where we're going to look at too. I'm still waiting for the day whether I still think Google is probably maybe the best, but the day you and I are like, yep, we held that before it paid a dividend. I haven't held a stock yet that was just in that growth mode and then transitioned over to becoming more value oriented and paying back
and announced the dividend. Oh, that's a good one. If I've ever owned a stock where they announced the NVIDIA, no.
Yeah, when I bought NVIDIA, it's always been small, but every stock that I bought that's a dividend stock, they were already paying it. So I'm just waiting for, I think it'll be cool when I can just, you and I can be like, yep, we own that when it was still in growth mode. Maybe 20, 30 years from now, it'll be Chipotle, right? I mean, I think you've talked about Oprah the Oracle, right? He owned Starbucks before they ever paid a dividend. I mean,
yeah, that's a good point. That's a good one. Yeah. I also wonder, did we talk before about, speaking of profitability, Uber, first quarter ever?
It still isn't. Didn't they fudge the numbers, though, a little bit? They use weird GAAP or non-GAAP. This is one, I mean, we'll have producer
contract. I'd have to double check.
I feel like they still do a little creative, like spin around three times, throw some salt over your shoulder, squint really hard, and it's profitable. So, yeah, it's all just right. You just take all the money you made and then you take away all the expenses you paid. Is it profitable? But I think they have a bunch of those line items. Well, if you back out this in one-time thing, and by the way, if you have to do it more than one quarter, it's not a one-time expense. I think Uber does this a lot too, where every quarter it's a new one-time. Oh, this is just a one-time expense. So we'll back it out. And it's like, yeah, I don't get to back out my mortgage. That's a regular expense. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, there's this, I don't know what the term is, but like, Uber doesn't own any cars.
Yeah.
Right. Airbnb doesn't own any houses. So there's like a, you know, for a product that you have where you don't have to have a depreciating asset tied to it and have loan losses attached to it. And I'm not saying I'm at this point a fan of either one of them as to be a shareholder. I kind of like your, you know, show me 10 years of, consistently, you know, having profitable quarters, but there is something where, you know, you don't own the house, you don't have exposure to the house. Now that might be something interesting if they start building houses, but anyway, you get what I'm saying with that, you know? So,
I mean, they, I think they consistently do things where it still follows under the guidelines of GAAP accounting or whatever, but they back out a lot of stuff. And that's the other thing with me too, is just like, look, I don't just get to pick and choose the expenses I want to back out from my, if I look at my finances like a balance sheet, it's just, like I said, the mortgage.
Hulu.
Yeah. It's just like, that's not how it works. If you took money out of the bank account, that's money that's not there. And you don't get to just cross that line out and be like, but yeah, if you take that line out, because if that's the case, I mean, you and I could definitely juice our numbers and look really good and everybody could do that, but that's not how it works. So that always makes me scratch my head a little bit. Speaking of this, the one that actually I watched, I think it was on Apple. I mean, it's been a while since I've watched it, but I also listen to podcasts on Adam Newman and WeWork. And this is the one that always
really
cracks me up, is that what they were doing. So they leased just the space in the building, so they didn't own the building. So my favorite was in their S1, it was some building in Brooklyn or whatever. And the entire building was valued at $1 million, but the floor that they leased, they valued it at $2 million. Basically all the work is just, and people were just, that company almost went public at a $60 billion valuation. And I was just like, whoa, where this, the audacity, like, oh, the building's worth 1 million, but this floor is worth 2 million. It's just like, how does that math make sense? Or how does that work?
Have you used their bathrooms on that floor? They're great.
Yeah. It's like, well, they got a pinball machine, a pool table, and they got a kegerator. That's right there. That's heavy. That's heavy stuff.
Oh, that's just funny because there's someone there thinking, let's do 2 million. That's a great, great story.
Yeah.
That's all I had for today, Nate.
That's great stuff right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just hope the I mean, I don't know if you call this an early Santa Claus rally. I mean, but
Santa Claus rally, yes.
Just keep it Santa going Claus. To the end of the year. It's been real good. I mean, I'm trying to stay even keeled and not get too high or too low, but also preparing myself.
This is a Thanksgiving. Yeah. I call this Santa. This is a Santa Claus rally. 100%. Right,
good. Let's keep it going because yeah, that was a really good month last month, and I hope it continues going. That's the thing.
You want to know the best investment I made in October?
What's that?
I paid to have Christmas lights put up.
Ooh, I bet you that takes a lot of guesswork out, an easy thing too. I mean,
here's the way you got to do it for the listeners at home. The catch was the guy cut me like 40% off. Mm-hmm. If you put them up in October.
Yep.
I was limited on the colors. Now I didn't turn the lights on, obviously.
Yep, so they're supposed to be,
but it looked a little goofy at, you know, Halloween. Cause I had a whole setup. I have like I had like a little dead body section and all this stuff. So it looked kind of weird with the lights, you know, just being hung up.
Right.
But I was like 40% off. You call those light places. I was limited on the colors, but best investment I made for the entire year. The wife's not talking to me. And then I'm like, I'll buy this for you, but you can't buy any more Christmas stuff.
Okay.
And it worked out. So nothing's that little non-stock related info.
That's it's a good tip. So do the people also come and take it down, or you have to?
Do, get yeah.
It? See, that's included. That is. I mean,
and you think so about
you're
it,
a little early on the draw. I feel lights are going up earlier and earlier.
And the guy, the way I got the money was there. My wife cut the deal was like, I'm going to be so busy in November, December. That's where he jacks up the price. Come October 18th or whatever. Limited, you know, the colors they don't like. So it's a win-win for all parties.
Yeah, this is just good marketing 101. I mean, just try to spread out the business. I mean, commission people do this in sales all the time. They usually have their busiest months, but let's just book this sale in the next month or whatever, or pre-book it. So yeah.
There you
that's
go.
That's a good tip.
Happy holidays to you. And well, let's see if we can squeeze in one before the end of the year, and we can do our best picks for 2024.
Yeah, we could wrap up 2023 with what the what did well, what didn't do well. I'm guessing
4,800 S&P. You think we can get there?
What's it at right now?
4,594.
So yeah, in terms of percentage, that's like what, 3%-ish or something like that. Yeah. I think it's very doable over the month, especially after keep cruising. I mean, last thing here is I am trying to stay even keeled and wait for the other shoe to drop, because I feel like for as much as interest rates were a hang up on the way down, now there's talks that there might not be more interest rate hikes. But if there is, that could be bad. But I think if the Fed and Powell cut rates, that could be a good thing. I still don't. I mean, for you and I, this really should not even matter. It's just like, I mean, interest rates have no bearing long term on our quality.
Just keep investing in well performing companies.
Yes.
That's all I can say. All right, Pete Munger, and I'll see you later.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Yeah.
If you have any questions about any of what we've talked about today or something we missed, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @2BudsTalkStocks or on Gmail at @2BudsTalkStocks. And occasionally we post pictures on Instagram at @2BudsTalkStocks. And if you listen to us on a platform like Apple, where you can leave a rating or review, please do so. It might help bump us up in the algorithm and get more listeners. Until next time, thanks for listening.